Hello, hello, and welcome back to our Finding Better podcast. My name is John Suzuki, and I am your host. And we have an amazing guest today, and I'm going to introduce you to her in just a second. But this is a place, and which is the reason why I'm so excited to have Bonnie D with me. But this is a place where we share real life experiences and wisdom. We're not here to tell you what to do. We're not here to share opinions or theory or even academics. We're here to help. And the whole idea is to share things that have worked in our lives and experiences that we've gone through that you might want to apply to your own life and in the finding that better you may be looking for. And it's just a wonderful, wonderful day because I have Bonnie D. Graham with me, aka Radio Red. She's an amazing personality and she's super, super successful. And she's an experienced radio and live broadcast personality. She's got millions of listeners around the world. And she's had a great and by her own description, an eclectic career. From early technology, and I was in early technology too, so we have a lot in common. But she's also done comedy and improv, and she's just an amazing person. And one of my favorite things that I've learned about Red, is that she loves to mentor young people. Red, Bonnie D, thank you and welcome to our show.
John, I'm honored to be your guest. I have recently invited you to be a guest on this show, Read My Lips, which is on my banner behind me for your viewers. Yep. You can see that. And I am very flattered that you have invited me. I love the theme of your show. I appreciate your attitude. Everything you said in the intro is how I do my shows. We don't preach. We don't lecture. We don't do theories. It's just about real people sharing real experiences from the heart. And Read My Lips is a show about creativity. I think yours is really along the same theme, just with a different title, Finding Better. My show is Finding Better Ways to Be Creative Through Our Own Experiences that we share. So thank you, John. I'm very, very flattered to be
well,
here.
Well, that's and that's the reason why I love having you here is because, you know, we're kind of the same spirit. Right. I mean, we want to share and we want to help people. And, you know, creativity is something. You know, when you talk about creativity, it's something that is really, really hard to do and have, especially in the world that we live in today, because, you know, we're grown. I, from my perspective and my experience, it's we've had our creativity blown out of us, just as we had our curiosity blown out of us. And we have to work hard to get it back because, you know, the old things, well, what is that? What did you draw? That looks stupid, you know? And, you know, and the world is just so harsh. And so I love what you're doing. I love the whole conversation on creativity. But listen, share a little bit about yourself, about yourself and where you come from and things that you'd like the audience to know.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for asking. Yes. I think my career, my whole life is eclectic. Grew up very protected as a nice girl on Long Island, New York. Started out in Queens, New York, a wonderful family. Dad was a doctor, a radiologist, had his own practice. He shared with another MD. And my mother was a nurse. Well, she was retired by the time she became a mom and she became an antique dealer, which was very interesting. And they were both active in our local synagogue and in the community. And I went to good public schools. But all of that, I was very shy, John. I don't know if you can believe that, but I was very shy and nervous as a teenager. Yes. Mm-hmm. It turns out that I met who I thought was the love of my life. I was at Sarah Lawrence College back in the day when it was, can I say this, girls only, women only. This is where Barbara Walters went, Leslie Gore went, Yoko Ono went years before, but I did run into Leslie Gore. It's my party. She was in the bookstore. She was there at about our time overlapped. And I learned a different way of thinking. Today, we call it critical thinking. And what was wonderful about the education at Sarah Lawrence College, John, was that you didn't take 6 or 8 classes and cram all that knowledge in. You took 3 subjects with 3 teachers. But under the banner of each subject, you took a private class with that teacher that was geared to your interests or budding interests. So I was taking French literature. I was able to speak fairly fluent French. I read an extra French novel each semester and discussed it in French with the teacher. 20th century French. I took a class on mathematical logic and I had a separate class with that teacher. I did that. I had a psychology class, child psychology, and I took a separate class with that teacher. So you took six classes with three instructors, and class size was very small, 12 or 15. It was lovely. And I bought a lot of hats. I wore hats and we had a cool life there. Anyway, it was very interesting. But bottom line was that what was my next phase in life was married in my late teens and moved to, where was I? I went to New Haven. My husband was at Yale. I met him at a mixer. Mm-hmm. We used to have, those were dances, John. And I met these Yalies showed up and I was very intrigued with this young man and we married and I commuted for a year. From New Haven, Connecticut to Bronxville, New York, which was eclectic in itself, John, because I was a married woman and wife from, let's say, Thursday night till Sunday night. And Sunday night, I got on an Amtrak train and went back to Bronxville to New York and stayed in a dorm room. I had a separate room and then visited my parents and stayed one night with them on Long Island. And then I took the train back to New Haven and was with my husband for a couple of days a week. I did this for an entire semester.
How far is it from the Bronx to New Haven?
Well, Bronxville, it was, I don't know, it was at least an hour train ride, maybe okay. 2 hours. Okay. So every Sunday I was on that train going back to school. And then every Friday I was going back. It was not the usual. It was not the norm. And I realized at that point, I wasn't the norm at all. And then my husband went to Harvard Architecture and we moved to Cambridge and bought a little house. We already had one child at that point and I gave birth to my second. So I finished my degree in psychology at Boston University, which was a traditional college education. But what was interesting, John, was when I went to transfer my credits from Sarah Lawrence, it was very hard to translate from a school that didn't give A, B, C's, D's, or E's. It was just she took the class and she did well. They had to come up with a grading system because a traditional college doesn't deal with, oh, she took six classes with three teachers and did well. So that was an interesting. Anyway, bottom line was he decided to move to the West Coast. So we moved to Eugene, Oregon. I hope this is getting interesting for you. And I was a young mom with a college degree. I had never worked a day in my life. I went right from college to married life. And what was interesting was, I think you'll get a kick out of this. When I was in Cambridge, before I had my daughter, I was finishing my degree at Boston University. Well, I got a bike with a baby carrier on the back, and I rode to Harvard Square a couple of days a week with my son, my little boy on the back, and put him into Radcliffe Daycare. And he went to an Ivy League daycare. Then I took the tram or whatever we called it into Boston, went to my courses, studied, came back to Harvard Square, got on the bike, put my son in the baby seat, drove home and made dinner for my family. This was also very, very unusual.
Yeah. When you started college, what was your vision for your life? Why did you go to college?
I went to college because that's what we did. I was the daughter of a doctor and a nurse. We were a family that valued education, John. And I applied to several colleges, but Sarah Lawrence was eclectic in itself. It offered, as I said, a different type of education where you could think more deeply in the topics. I wasn't super wealthy like a lot of the girls were. I was in a mix of people from all over the country, maybe all over the world, daughters of very high-end people in education, in politics, in journalism. And I just aspired. I was thrilled when they accepted me, just thrilled. I felt like I was walking into a different world, John, different from anything I had known. I don't know what I aspired to. I just wanted to learn.
I mean, Ivy League and that level of I mean, for all practical purposes and lack of a better term, elite, right?
Sarah Lawrence wasn't a Seven Sisters school and it was outside of the Ivy. So we were, I wouldn't say aspirational. I hope I'm not offending anybody, but we weren't Wellesley and we weren't some of those schools, but we were well known as a different type of education.
Okay.
I think
that's
what attracted me.
Okay. The term I never heard before was Ivy League daycare. that is something that I'm going to keep with me for a while. So you never worked a day in your life. and you were a mom, and you moved from one coast to another coast, to the other coast.
Yep, right.
And I would say from one culture to an entirely different culture.
Totally right.
I mean, if you're going from Cambridge to Eugene, Oregon, and how did you navigate that? Did you go to work?
The story takes a twist.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of years later, I realized that the marriage had to end, and I left the marriage, and I needed to start earning a living.
So when you left the marriage, were you in Eugene?
I was in Eugene, 3,000 miles from my family with a few friends, and my husband went back to Seattle, Washington, where his family was, and I became a single mom, and I had to figure life out all of a sudden at 27 years old.
And you decided to stay in Eugene as opposed
to go back
home?
For some strange reason, I did, because I wanted to be on my own. I didn't want to be somebody's wife or daughter or mother.
Yep.
Well, I was all of those. I wanted to, all of a sudden, independence reared in my mind, and I reared up, and I wanted to create a life, carve a life for myself. So I called my parents. This was, I'm not going to admit what year this was, but it was before cell phones. Before cell phones, John? Okay.
Yeah,
I called
remember.
My parents. I think you do. That's why I like you so much. I called my parents in New York and I said, what should I do? I don't know. And they just collected a stack of brochures on different careers. And they mailed me a whole stack by mail, by first class U.S. mail in an envelope. Brochures. Hard copy.
This is pre-internet, folks.
Yes, I want you all to know. I hope I look better than that. And I opened up this set of brochures and I said, what in the world is this? And it was very interesting. So I looked at the brochures, and up among the stack was computer programmer. Now, this was burgeoning. This was new. This was something that people were just starting to think about. And you know what I'm talking about. And I asked my friends, how would I do this? And they said, there's a community college. Bonnie, you don't have a car. You've got two kids, one in elementary school, one in daycare, need to find a daycare.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, go to the community college and talk to them. So I took two buses and I went to the community college and I said, here's my transcript. I have a bachelor's degree, magna cum laude, in psychology. I have an eclectic career background, education background from Sarah Lawrence and Boston University, and I want to take your computer class. And they looked at me and said, we're sorry, it's filled. But one of the registrars took me aside and she said to me, listen carefully. Most of the people will drop out in about 2 weeks. Come to the class three times a week. This is true, John.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Most of the people will drop out. Come to the class, sit or stand in the back of the class. It meets three times a week, and there will be a place for you. I promise you.
Wow.
So
listen. I mean, kudos to you. I mean, holy smoke. You saw something. You said, hey, I think this might be something for me. And, you know, I am a major fan and advocate of community colleges. I'm a product of community colleges. I love community colleges. And one of the reasons why I love it so much is because a lot of the instructors there are actually living what they are teaching. And as opposed to, you know, career academicians. And it's wonderful. My best college years were in community college. But here you were a single mom with two kids, and you're going back to a community college, taking two buses. That's amazing. And because you had something inside, what was that thing inside of you that drove
curiosity.
You to do that?
Curiosity, intellectual curiosity, a passion for using my brain. I wanted to use my skills. I knew math very well. I thought I had a good way of figuring things out. And in fact, John, I got two degrees simultaneously in computer operations and computer programming. I aced every test. I aced every class. I got A's everywhere.
Wow.
I did get a car eventually. And the men in my statistics class hated me. Do you know why? Because I did all of the problem statistics with a pencil and paper. I didn't use a slide rule, John. And they said, who is she? Why is this girl, this woman, this 27-year-old woman has got two kids, and why is she beating us in class? What's going on here? I got 2 degrees, and I found out that summer that there was a job opening at the college for a community college programmer analyst for a reporting system for the entire community college system of the state of Oregon. And I applied for the job. I did. I was in New York visiting my family with my kids, and I got a call. They told me I was up for, I was either me or one other person. It was a man of color, or me, a woman who was single and divorced. They had to figure out who was the better one for the job. They told me this. I got the job. I went back after the summer, back to Eugene. I took the bus. I think I was still taking bus. I took the bus to the college for the first day. I looked around in the office and I said, do I have to stay till 5 o'clock? I had never been in an office job in my life. Do I have to stay? And they said, yes, it's called a job. And anyway, bottom line was, after a year, my boss left to go to some development job in California, and they put me in charge of the whole system, John.
So during this time, you had two small kids at home. How did you manage that and manage their care?
I enrolled my kids in swimming at the Y. I started doing disco dancing and teaching. I got some decent babysitters. I found Mrs. Buckles about 2 blocks from my apartment, and I walked my daughter there in a stroller every day. And Mrs. Buckles made her own Play-Doh, and she had a slide in the backyard, and she loved to take care of kids. An older woman, she was married, and she had a nice yard, and it was very inexpensive, and a lot of working moms brought their children to her. My son was at the elementary school right across the street. I started selling Mary Kay cosmetics at
Good
night.
Good for you.
I created a, I built a life, John. I built a life out of basically nothing, 3,000 miles from my family. I was working, taking my kids for swimming lessons, becoming socially involved, learning to dance, teaching dance classes, selling cosmetics. And here's the trick. I said to my children, I'll help you with your homework. I will be there for you. We did our work together. I brought work home from my job, some of my coding, and my kids and I did homework together. We ate dinner together. We watched TV together. We did homework together. We made puzzles. We did jigsaw puzzles on the floor. My son and I were doing complicated puzzles, very smart young man. And my daughter, who was about 3, would crawl up and pick up a piece and put it in where the puzzle, where it belonged. I looked at her like, how did she know that? How did she get that? She was observing how we were doing the puzzles. We played cards together. I like to tell people, John, that my children raised me. I was the kid they raised me. What do you think of that?
Well, it's amazing, you know, and you know, and people will say, well, yeah, that was back in those days. That was back in those days. But you know what, folks? Life back then was just as hard, and maybe in different ways.
Yep.
But you were a single mom, and the thing that always strikes me, and strikes me with you, is our life is the sum of the choices that we've made. Now, a lot of people have a hard time with that, and because people say, "Well, a lot of this wasn't my choice." But then I ask them, I say, hey, listen, do you think that your life in the future is going to be the sum and the product of the decisions you make from now on? And everybody says, of course it is. Well, if it applies to the future, it applies to the past.
100%
and,
right.
You know, you made the choice of staying on the West Coast. You made the choice of raising your kids and taking care of your kids on your own when you could have gone back east to your family.
I could have.
You made the choice to pursue a career in something that very few people back then knew about or wanted anything to do with.
That's correct.
And you made a life for yourself. And the pattern that I'm hearing from you is every step of the way got better and better and better. And I love the togetherness that you maintained with your kids. I mean, I just tell people these days, start with dinner. Start with turning off the TV set.
Yes.
Putting down the phones and just spending 20 minutes together every day as a family. And but I listening to you, you had every reason to blame somebody else or blame your circumstances or be a victim of your circumstances. And and what I'm hearing is that at least through this point in your life, you refused all that.
You said,
you know what, this is my life. I'm going to go do something with it. That's amazing.
I just kept making choices. And John, I don't know where it came from. I don't know where the strength came from. Maybe from my parents. It was probably from them because that's all I knew. But I kept making choices. And what's interesting is a few years later, I realized, and by the way, as my kids got older and started to take more school, learn more in school, I said to them, if you want help with your language learning, I studied French and I spoke fairly fluent French. And I had gone to France one summer or Switzerland one summer. And I said, I'll help you if you choose Spanish or Latin or anything else, I won't be there for you. And so they both took French. So we did French homework together. It was a lot of fun raising them. But I decided at one point it was time to go back to New York. I was ready. Mm-hmm. And I said to myself, I have achieved independence. I am raising two very smart, very good value children, meaning their values were good in life. They didn't get in any trouble. They were very smart in school. We were a very cohesive little family. And I moved back to New York. But here's how I did it. And I think you'll love this story. I wanted to work right away. I needed a job. I wasn't just going to go back and say, oh, I've got some savings or I'm going to freeload on my parents.
Yep.
So, and remember, this was before cell phones and you know what else it was before. So I asked my uncle, who was a doctor in New York, I said, could you send me the want ads, the job ads from the New York Times? Could you FedEx them to me? We did have FedEx in the day. We also had indoor plumbing, I have to tell you that. Thought I'd mention that. Not that far back, buddy.
Okay, good.
And my uncle sent me the ads, and I started to look for anything in computer programming because that's what I did. I had successfully been employed for a couple of years. I was running a major computer system, community college information system. I had already changed jobs and gone to work for a company called Otis, Oregon Information Systems, not the elevator company. Mm-hmm. And I was doing student services programming now on an IBM 4341. I was not key punching anymore. We had a terminal to enter our code, and I wasn't writing COBOL. I was writing in PL1, and I was running this whole system to, I redesigned the permanent transcript card for the secondary schools, the high schools in the entire state of Oregon, which were our clients. So I was doing a whole new level of programming and I had a blast, but it was time to go back to New York. So I got the want ads, the New York Times, and I sat there and circled and I realized I was 3 hours earlier. So it was going to be 6 a.m. when things opened, 9 a.m. in New York. And I started applying for jobs and I called and I called and I called and I made appointments. I think
Okay, folks, for those of you who are listening that are trying to figure out, okay, how do I get a job? Okay, listen up. Go for it.
I got 15 interviews booked. I had the kids stay with friends in Eugene. I didn't want to disrupt their school.
How many calls did you make?
About 25 calls, and I got 15 job interviews. I flew to New York.
Whoa.
I was sewing all my own clothes in those days, and I brought one of my best gray suits that I had made with different blouses. And I said to my parents, please make yourselves available for a week. And they said, fine. Dad was a doctor, but he took some time off to drive around. My mother was driving as well. I had interviews in Manhattan, in Westchester, in Queens, on Long Island, and
wow,
around in those places. No, nothing in Connecticut or Manhattan, and nothing that far. I went on all of those 15 job interviews and I got 5 offers in 5 days.
Okay.
Every night we would change the blouse. I would launder whatever I had worn. I had my one gray business suit that I had made. And my parents were phenomenal and they took me everywhere for a week. They chauffeured me.
And that is a heck of a batting average.
Oh,
that
I
mean that is so what you know I mean folks are listening and going, oh yeah, that never happens.
It happened.
What how did that happen? What do you attribute that part of your success to?
I must have sounded eager. I must have had a decent personality in those days. I wasn't this person in those days, but for some reason my skills and how I presented myself and the professionalism and enthusiasm must have done something. I got an absolutely eclectic across the board mix of job offers, John. You wouldn't believe it. And I picked the wrong job. I accepted the
Oh,
wrong
well,
job offer.
that's a whole nother issue. But bummer.
Well, it wasn't actually. I
Okay.
accepted a job in a multi-level, not multi-level, but multi-conglomerate. They were in beauty, they were in jewelry, and they were in beauty salons. I won't tell you the name of the company, but I accepted a programmer analyst job for this company because I liked their office and I liked where they were located. It was uptown Manhattan and it was really pretty, except I didn't know at the time they were changing offices and moving to a block from Penn Station in around 8th or 9th Avenue in New York, around 35th Street. And it was a crime-ridden street and people were getting mugged right there on the corner. And they moved shortly after. And I didn't know that the consultant who hired me was deciding that he didn't want me after he hired me. So he was having people in the computer section of the in the computer room sabotage my jobs and things weren't working. And I felt that they were squeezing me.
Wow. Wow.
It was very unpleasant. And the bottom line is that I started taking my lunch hours, going on interviews all over Manhattan looking for another job.
Okay, so that's another clue, because there's a lot of people out there who aren't happy
Just kept
where
looking.
they are right now.
Just kept looking.
Go. Just keep looking. It's your choice.
It's your choice.
It's your choice. Yeah.
And I accepted a job at the Daily News, the newspaper, for a programmer analyst, and I was ready to start. And I took a weekend in between jobs. I left this job. Actually, they asked me to leave just about the time I was ready to resign. And they gave me a box and said, clean out your desk. We don't want you here anymore, which was very insulting because I was about to go. Anyway, the bottom line is the weekend of waiting to start at the Daily News. And it sounded like a very exciting job. The weekend of the Daily News, I got a call. I was living in Great Neck, Long Island at the time, renting a very nice house with my children about 5 minutes from my parents. And I got a call from a headhunter in New York who had not been able to find me any jobs when I was in Oregon, but I had called her and she remembered me. She kept me on file. And the message there is make sure people remember you in a positive way. Don't burn bridges unless you really have to. Okay.
Yeah.
She called me and said, I have a job for you. I said, well, I just accepted a job in Manhattan. She said, oh, no, no, no. I've got something else. She said, you're going to go out to Woodbury, Long Island. I said, where's Woodbury? I grew up here. I'd never heard of it. She said, it's exit such and such on the Long Island Expressway. You're going to go for an interview with Mr. Kelly on Monday. I said, listen, it's snowing. I had a nice car. It doesn't go in the snow. I'm running a fever of 101. I'm sneezing and coughing and I'm not going. She said, you're going. I said, why? She said, it's a programmer job. I said, but I already have a programmer job in New York. She said, I'm insisting that you take this interview. So I got dressed that Monday and I braved the snow and I went slowly and I got my car there and they made me wait. And Mr. Kelly was going to interview me. And I said to him, listen, I'm here under strong recommendation that I need to talk to you. However, I already have a job lined up somewhere else. I might be contagious. I brought a box of Kleenex with me. I'm not kidding. I brought a box of Kleenex with me. Make sure I'm not around a lot of people. This is way before COVID. You know
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
And I said, please. First, somebody else interviewed me and he said, do you do assembly language? I said, I learned it, but I don't like it. I'm not doing it. Do you this Fortran? I said, I don't want to do those. That's not why I'm here. So he said, Mr. Kelly now wants to see you. He was a high level vice president. This was an offshoot. This was a satellite office of a bank, correspondent bank, not a walk in and get a check bank. This was a banker's bank, back office. We did check processing and vault for savings banks all over the United States. Okay. So I went to Mr. Kelly's office and I had my Kleenex. I said, don't sit too close to me. I mean, they must have thought I was hysterically funny at that point or sad. And he said to me, do you have a checking account? I said, yeah. Why? He said, do you know how to balance a checkbook? I said, yeah. He said, okay, you're what we're looking for. I said, what? He said, I said, is this a bank? He said, no, we have a job for you. I said, what? He said, we're going to create a bank for you because we like your resume and we like what you do. And he said, you have two skills we want. I said, what are those? He said, number one, you talk computer, and number one, you speak English, and you do both very well. I said, what's the job? He said, we're creating a job called a systems liaison for you, where you're going to spend time in the Woodbury office on Long Island speaking to the different programmer analysts. And then you're going to go into our office in the Midtown Manhattan area, 42nd and where was it? I forget. 42nd and Madison. Yes, in the old Green Stamp building, I remember. And he said, then you're going to go into Manhattan. You're going to speak with all the people in all the different departments, the check processing, the vault, everything. And you're going to find out what kind of reports they need. I said, why am I going to do that? He said, well, you're going to bring that knowledge back as an analyst to the programmers in Woodbury, and they are going to create programs that are better aligned with what the people in the departments who run the bank need to do, need
so,
to have.
So, okay, get to the punchline. Did you take the job?
Of course I took the job. So I called my uncle who had gotten me the job ads, and I called everybody. And I said, what should I do? This rising star who had worked at another big bank and these people in Woodbury. And it was a 30-minute ride for, instead of a trip, a schlep from trains and buses into Manhattan every day. They said politely decline the job at the Daily News and take the job at the trust company. So I did. And it worked out pretty well. And eventually they made me business operations manager, a brand new division. They taught me how to write a business plan that was eventually approved by the board. They gave me an office with a window. They said to me, go to a hiring fair and hire 8 people to be reporting to you in this new division. Then they gave me a computer and they said, we're firing our contract programmers. You're going to do the conversion programming for a bank in New York, and we have a turnkey banking system. Then they said, then I got a call from the marketing director in the Manhattan office, and he said, how would you like to do marketing for us? I said, what do you want me to do? He said, well, I like the way you work, and you're going to now work in Manhattan. So they moved me to Manhattan, and then the vice president of the bank fired the marketing director and fired the people who reported to him, and they made me the whole damn marketing department.
So,
John, are you following any of this?
Yeah, and I want, we're running out of time, unfortunately.
Sorry.
And no, but what did you learn from all this? What did you from way back when to this part of your life? What were the main things that you learned?
Keep an open mind, be curious, don't be afraid of opportunity, know who you are, always have a good business suit ready and nice shoes.
Always be ready. Yeah.
Be polite, have a sense of humor and a smile, meet people head on, face to face, and don't be shy about who you are. Don't demand, but give a lot back so they get to know you, and then be sure your values are being met. And when you see a little light coming through a window or a little opening in a door, push it open with intention and see what's on the other side. I have had many, many, many careers. I got into radio and TV accidentally. I'm now a broadcaster. I have created 55 radio series, 50 of them for some of the largest consultancies and business software companies in the world. And I now have 4 series. I've had at one time 18 radio series, 6 hours of live broadcasting a week, and been a serious part of a bottom line for a big company, bringing in so many clients. And now I'm just having fun talking to really smart, cool people like
Unbelievable.
You.
Me too. And you know, it's amazing. I mean, what you just said is, you know, when you mentor young people about when you see a light coming through a door or a window, push it open with intention.
Yes.
And it sounds like that's what you did.
And curiosity.
That's what I just wanted to talk about, is because, yes, is because what I'm hearing from you is that you have got your curiosity muscle, mm-hmm, is really, really strong, right? And it's wonderful. And you know, the problem that I see with a lot of folks is that life has blown the curiosity right out of them.
Wrong.
Because wrong door. Why did you do that? You know what I mean? And so it does take a little bit of courage to be
a
curious,
lot.
You know, and you know, the old saying, curiosity killed the cat. No, it might've killed one, but you know what? You know how many lives?
I'm on, right? My 7th out of 9 lives already, at least 7th life.
But you know, I mean, imagine, you know, you take the opposite of that, and how many cat lives has curiosity saved? right? And it's just a weird way to look at things, but I love that about you. And I really hope that folks will take what you just said and work with it. Work with it. It's okay to be you. Be memorable. You know, when you're working, be remembered for the person who you are and the worker that you are. I'm sorry, Red, you were going to say something.
I was going to say you are your own brand, John. You're your own brand. I never show up on a Zoom call, even a casual call, without either wearing my red jacket or my black other radio jacket, my red rose, these earrings. My hair is always done. I bought a new brand of lipstick and a background behind me. People say, oh, it's so phony to have a background. I don't think so. This is one of my brands, is Read My Lips. This is talk shows.
That's
and
true.
I never show up without my brand, and it doesn't take long to put it together. This is not hours. I wake up looking like this almost. Anyway, my point is that live your brand. Be identifiable as who you want to be. Bring that with you where you go. So people remember me from years and years ago. They find me on LinkedIn. They want to be on my show. They want to bring me a topic. They want to invite me to do something. I'm very, very flattered and very gratified to be memorable in a positive way, John. And I think that's
amazing.
One of the goals. It's a goal.
It is. It is. You know, you and I talked about this, but I think we all share a common purpose, and that is to make the world better than the day we landed on it. Somehow, do something, right? And what you're doing, you're being you, you're being real, you're being your brand, you're making yourself, you're putting yourself out there. A lot of that takes a lot of freaking courage, because, you know, we live in such a world of fear. And, you know, something I learned from you, I'm going to put something up behind me with my brand on it.
By the way, I'm a drummer too. I started taking drum lessons in my 60s. And 6 weeks later, I was on stage with an adult band at the School of Rock in Durham, North Carolina, on stage drumming an Aerosmith song. Yes. And I have no idea how. You talk about courage. And then I was going to open mic nights at taverns in the Durham Cary area. And one of my classmates there, who was already in a band for years, she was a drummer too. She signed me up. And the next thing I know, they say, Bonnie, what songs are you bringing? And I said, oh my God, I have my sticks in my purse, but what three songs? So I did Mustang Sally, and I did a couple of other songs, and musicians came and they joined, and guitar players played with me and bass players, and we got a couple singers. And the next thing you know, I was at weekly open mics at a tavern as the drummer who came with red boots and fancy hair and lipstick when everybody was in jeans and sweatshirts and t-shirts and all that.
My brand.
I never stopped my brand, even as a drummer, John. I never stopped my brand. That was it.
And how did the drummer thing happen?
A friend of mine was telling me that she was learning drums in Florida. And one day, I guess I was a little bored, and I started looking up, and I found that there was a School of Rock near me. And they said, we'll give you a free 30 minute of any instrument. And I called them up and I took a 30 minute drum lesson. And I looked at the teacher and I said, sign me up. I want to learn drums. And that was 6 weeks later. I was playing.
Unbelievable. And you know what? That experience and those things that you, those doors and those windows that you opened, and you went through it, that it becomes part of your life. It becomes part of who you are, and that
your
stays
story.
With you.
It's
and
your story.
And it's just wonderful. And I just hope folks listening will get a little bit of inspiration from you. I know I did. And you know, just take one of the things that you said and just go with it. Listen, if you're up to coming back someday, I would love to have you back, Red.
I'd love to.
This has just been, we're beyond time, and it has just gone like that. You're such a joy to be with. And so, so
sweet.
Thank you.
I'm looking forward to having you on my show soon as well. Is this going to be seen on video on YouTube or
Yeah.
I just want your viewers to know that the background behind me is not the one I started out with, which I also paint, and I've got about 300 paintings, oils and not oils, acrylics and watercolors and collages. But I decided it was time for something new, and I use a program called Night Cafe Studio, not Midjourney. And I went in and I saw a prompt somebody else used, and I said, make me a moonscape with mixing of oil, water, soap, and tinsel. And it created this moonscape that you see behind me. And then I said, add red lipstick. There are several behind me, and add a red microphone. I liked what I saw. I put it in Photoshop. I added the ReadMy. I found a free graphic of the red lips, which are, I think, perfect. And I added the text, ReadMy, Cool Conversations with Creatives with AK. And I put it together, and I started using it as my new background for my show. So that was a brave creativity that I had never had before. Just wanted you to know.
And you opened the door to learning AI.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, that's a whole nother topic. Just real quick, I encourage everybody, because AI, people say, well, you know, AI is going to be kind of like the internet. The internet took 20 years, folks, right, to get to where we are today, maybe 25. This is going to happen in 1/10 the time, if not faster. It's upon us, and it's just going to be such an amazing, amazing ride. Learn it now, and learning is cumulative. What's that? What am I looking at now?
That's my other show, Technology Revolution, The Future of Now. I have almost 200,000 listeners and viewers a year, and I created this recently. It's red microphones inside of hourglasses in a Zentangle type of a curved background. This is one of three I replicated. Only the part on the left was what Night Cafe gave me, and I copied it into Photoshop and made three, and then I added the text on top, and it just makes me really happy. This is what I use on my tech show, and the episode every week, the title is The Future of Something in AI, Manufacturing, Empathy, Automotive, Drones, Teaching, Online Instruction, Novels, writing characters for TV.
Wonderful.
And that's what I do. So AI is part of my life. I just wanted to share this with you.
You know, Wow. You are just nonstop.
I get bored very easily.
I love it. Okay. And for those of you who can't see the screen and are listening, Red's show.
You call me Bonnie now.
Yeah, I want to say Bonnie, but I keep thinking Red. It's called Read My Lips Radio, Cool Conversations with Creatives with AKA Radio Red. So look up Read My Lips Radio and you'll find her. And Bonnie, this has just been wonderful. I just called you Bonnie.
That's
Red,
okay.
This has been wonderful.
Use the brand. John, you're delightful to speak with, by the way. I've appreciated it. And I was very flattered that you invited me, and I'm looking forward to having you on my creativity show.
I can't wait.
Your story. You're going to have a lot of fun. It's a party. It's a three-person panel, and it's a party. It's not an interview, and you're going to have a blast.
Wonderful. And we'll let everybody know on my side when it happens. So
thank you, John.
Really good. Okay, Red. Thank you, everybody. Thank you for joining us, and God bless you, and see you next time. Bye.